Good morning, everyone. This is Brandon with IHCA. Welcome to our Amerigroup Managed Care call with IHCA members. Today is July 14th, 2021. I'll do a summarized version of our pertinent informational letters that were released over the last month before turning it over to John for some opening comments from Amerigroup. So the first IL that has come out since our last call that it would be important to you all would be electronic visit verification, the June update. There is an IL 2239. What this IL does is it makes EVV optional for assisted living and RCF providers who utilize shift staffing in order to exercise that optional status. You would need to complete an attestation by July 31st that says that your program, your AL or your RCF, utilizes shift staff. And then that will be done on an attestation form this year. The second one is IL 2238. It's HCBS home health aid and nursing visits. It talks about and I think more clearly defines or redefines what a visit is. I did encourage you to look at that. From my understanding, it lays out a visit as being anywhere between 0 and 2 hours. But more additional information is in that IL as well. And then another one would be IL 2244. This is the resumption of in-person assessments and service plan monitoring. And what this kind of is doing is retracting or pulling back some of those COVID-19 waivers or exercise the some of those requirements that have been in place before that had been relaxed, I guess is what I'm trying to say. They're moving back to normal processing. And so that IL 2244, resumption of in-person assessments and service plan monitoring, is one that you may want to check out as well. With that update, I will check with John and his team at Amerigroup and see if you guys have any opening comments that you would like to make.
Yeah, sort of piggybacking on the last IL, on July 1st, our long-term services and supports community-based case managers started to return to face-to-face meetings. And this includes both the case managers working directly with members on plans of care and continual support throughout the year, as well as our independent assessment teams. They have also begun face-to-face assessments. There are options that members can exercise voluntarily should they feel the need for continued virtual interaction for safety standpoint, but it's not an option that the staff people can exercise independently. It would be triggered by members' request. So that is exciting. The reports have been coming back that both members and associates on the assessment teams and the community-based case management teams are enjoying the experience of interacting face-to-face again. It has triggered, quite an increase in our changes in plans of care, which means adjustments are happening based on member needs, change in conditions, et cetera. And so our LTSS utilization management team that Donna Went heads is in taking quite an influx of changes, new requests for services, and so forth. We sort of anticipated that happening, not knowing exactly how it would happen. Now we're in the thick of it. So it's a good time. It's nice to see opening of some aspects of the Medicaid program, and particularly in the LTSS space, where we felt the effects of the pandemic on members and our staff operations, probably as acute or more acutely than a lot of the other programmatic work that we do in administering Medicaid benefits for members across the state. We do not have a timeline yet on our return to the field of the physical health case management team and our behavioral health case management teams. We anticipate hearing a little bit more from our corporate leaders and Anthem, as that will be informed across all of the markets that we're in, both Medicaid, Medicare, and commercial. There are a number of new activities occurring with Amerigroup Iowa this spring, summer, and fall. We have processed a number of community transformation grants, and you'll see a lot of that activity in local press or social media as the summer progresses and the fall progresses. A lot of it is in the social determinants of health and health equity, bridging the gaps in care. And that includes our LTSS members. I know we are getting requests from our LTSS team on members who are housing insecure, for example, and are working hard to address those housing insecurities, including transitioning individuals with disabilities who are homeless into safe and secure housing. So you'll hear more and more from us about health equity and social determinants of health moving forward. I think I'm going to pause there and ask Danielle if she's got any updates to share or if Angela has anything.
This is Danielle. Hello, everyone. I'm not sure if we communicated this. I've been on so many meetings or not, but I think there was a revamp of the Iowa health plan, and we have new, but not new, but they revamped their job roles, and we have provider experience representatives. So before, the home health providers would reach out to me for any claim issues. That has changed, and there are designated representatives based on the provider's locations that they will reach out for claim issues. I am still here, but I guess my role, my role is back to what it should be, is for contract related questions and concerns only. And that's all I have for now.
Thanks, Danielle. That actually kind of rolled into our first previously submitted question or pre-submitted question. And it's about the provider, home health provider relations maps. It sounds like it's not necessarily specific to home health, but it's just provider relations in general. Has a provider experience individual assigned to a county that they would make their first contact regardless of what kind of provider they are? Is that accurate?
Yes, that's accurate. So it's kind of, and I guess, and I always explain this to some providers, is it kind of mirroring what United Healthcare has. You know, people who deal with United Healthcare know they have a contractor and they have an advocate. So this is the same process where no matter what provider type you are, home health, hospice, physician, you know what I mean, based on where the county, that is going to be your representative for any servicing issues, claims or servicing issues and concerns.
Perfect. I think I've talked to John about this, and I think you directed me to the contact us piece on Amerigroup's webpage. Is it the QM patient-centered care consultant map? Is that the map we're looking for as a provider?
No, I'm going to email you the map now. Because I guess we all were having a hard time trying to locate that map on the website, but I will email you the map so you can distribute it to all the providers if they need it.
Okay.
And if they cannot find it.
There was a link called that QM, patient-centered care consultant map, and I'll put it on the screen now. Let me know if you can see that. It looks like the provider experience individuals and many familiar yes. names, obviously.
Yes, that is it.
Have worked within the past. So I think maybe that's where that link is located. It's on, it's in the contact us section. I'm hoping we can maybe provide a link, or maybe I can provide this link in the chat for anyone. That is what I have pulled up on the screen now. And I'm hoping that looks accurate. Does that look
okay? Yes, it is. I have it up on my screen as well. And that's the exact same app.
Okay.
Yes.
Perfect. So,
I would also note that yesterday I emailed Brandon to you and to Julie Adair a list of associates and their assigned counties along with their email addresses.
Yep, I do have that. Yes, so I just saw a question come in underneath my link. This map would be for all providers. This is not just a home health. This would be the contact for any provider type. This is the first
yes.
person you would go to. So
that is correct. Yes.
Perfect. So knowing that, any ongoing or additional questions that you have should go through your provider experience individual. I guess maybe one follow-up I would have for either John or Danielle possibly. If a provider was working on something currently or actively with their provider relations individual before and now may have someone new assigned to them, what should their process be for whatever project they were working with their provider relations with before?
It's up to the provider. They can actually reach out to whoever the old provider relations, you know, I mean, person was, and then we will you know, forward that information over, you know what I mean, to the new representative, or they can reach out to the new representative directly. And the reason why the old one can be involved is because we no longer have access to certain things. So, you know what I mean, even if I had, and a lot of them been forwarded over. So if I had some claims, you know what I mean, from a provider, effective June 1st, if a project was not submitted through by me, it has to go to that new representative because I no longer have access to do that. And a couple of providers we have had transition calls. So, I mean, there's some providers that have like a lot of issues or complex issues. And I have had phone calls with that provider with the new representative to transition over. So if that's something that, you know, I mean, they want to do, they can do that as, you know, we can set that up as well also. So, because sometimes you just need to talk through some of the issues.
Perfect. I will just leave this up on the screen as this is a change for many of you. So if you are viewing this on a computer, you'd be able to see who the new rep is for you and any additional contact information if that's something that you're not able to see at the time or see right now. So
let me add one more thing.
Go ahead, Daniel.
And I just want to add, you know what I mean, for providers and a couple of providers, you know what I mean, because of this new change, I just want to, you know what I mean, there's some of these, you know, representatives are overwhelmed because they're all provider types. What I can do from time to time is I can still review claims, but I can't submit a project. So if a provider has a question, you know, my normal home health or whoever, about a denial, I can still look at those claims and, you know, try to help you what's going on and what's wrong, but I just can't submit a project. But I can still, you know, help you out with that until the transition is 100% and it's really smooth. Just let people know. I can still assist in, you know what I mean, in some type of way.
You can still troubleshoot, but you can't actually submit the
yes.
project.
Okay. Correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Perfect. And John, did you have another comment you wanted to make?
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify the link that you dropped into the chat is the link that took you to the map on the screen. Is that correct?
Sorry. Yeah, it is supposed to. Is it not?
I'm actually just trying to draw attention to the link on the chat.
Okay, sounds good. So yes, that should take you there. If you have any questions or need to take this information down later. And then,
I just
so I'm
tested
looking at
it
this.
and it does successfully take you to the map.
Perfect. And so I'll move to the second part of the second question, I guess, which is, I think, part of a lot of the discussion that's taking place in the chat right now as well. And it's asking about the cost containment unit process and claims disputes and the whole XP modifier thing. So I know we've had, I know John, we've had some email exchanges about this topic. Can you talk? I know we need to submit some specific information on
Yeah, I just want to say at the top that we need to see provider level and claims level information for us to be able to provide to cost containment in order for them to see what you're seeing. I sent you an email about a month ago responding to a state request that indicated that when we did a sweep, we were not seeing a large number of issues here. So in order for us to be able to even begin to address this with our cost containment unit, we're going to need to be able to see provider level, claims level information and examples of where there are either not responses within the 70 days or other information. Without that, the people you're talking to at Amerigroup on this call today and our associates within operations can't help. We need you to help us.
So,
hey, Brandon, this is Julie.
Yeah, Julie, before you go into that, I will say we did have some exchanges after a request I had made to the state. It seemed like the response I received outlined the supposed policy or the process that was supposed to be in place. Before we even go into any of the details that providers may want to discuss, can you explain to us what the process is supposed to be for the cost containment unit? Just so everyone is on the same page of, if this was not followed, then we would have an argument to make, I suppose. And a second would be for us to be able to prove that communication didn't happen. I don't know what the expectation is for us to say, yeah, we did not get a response within 70 days, besides saying we did not get a response within X number of days. Does that make sense?
Brandon, this is Julie, and I agree. That's exactly where I was going. On last month's call, we asked what the process is when providers respond back to the cost containment unit with their information, because they currently do not get any response back that's been received. There's no communication whatsoever until money is being taken back.
So in an
So
instant, so
we
in an
asked
instant,
what, no,
in
we
an inch,
asked what the policy was for these providers working with the cost containment unit last month. You guys said you would take that back, and we do not have that information as of yet. Do you have information on what providers are to do and what the cost containment unit's work is once the providers respond back with a dispute?
I'm not sure if anyone from Amerigroup is talking, but if you are, you cannot hear.
This is Danielle. From what I know, I mean, we do not have a detailed answer from cost containment that we can share with you guys yet.
What I just did is drop in an outline of that there is a dispute process. It's outlined on the letter, the number of days a provider has to send initial recruitment letter back. And this is pretty much what I shared with you last month and reiterated again yesterday. You know, if I know a provider is saying that they haven't received feedback from cost containment, then we can go to cost containment and say provider X did not receive communication from cost containment. That's the type of information that would be helpful for our provider solutions reps to take to cost containment.
Would the process not be, though, that they should receive something back that the information has at least been received by cost containment? When we're talking tens of thousands of dollars, there should be a communication back that they received the information. Because when I called cost containment myself, they literally told me, when things get busy here, we do miss things. We don't see them.
So I guess this is Brandon. From our understanding, this is not with specific claim detail examples, but what our understanding is a provider will receive a letter. They will then submit a dispute within the required time frame. They receive no communication back after that dispute has been submitted. And then they will, in some cases, and kind of what's going on in the chat here, they will receive a final letter, and that does not even acknowledge any of the dispute that has been sent in, saying that this is your final notice. We will be recouping funds as of X date, which all but removes any appeal right that a provider would have for a recoupment that is inappropriate. And so I know this is anecdotal, I guess, is maybe what you'd call it. But that is what has been the experience of many providers. And so, as John mentioned, we will need specific information from you all if this is an experience that you are having right now. Ideally, it would be a claim ID that we can, one, prove that the proper identifier, whether it's Z76.89 or the XB not homebound, was indicated on the claim, some kind of proof of that, as well as the letter, the recoupment letter that you were received pulling funds back for that specific claim or those claims, and then your dispute notice that was mailed in or faxed in on a date. And then if you've received a final notice with no other response, that would be maybe another piece of information that would be helpful to receive. Is there anything from that I haven't mentioned from Danielle or John that you think should be included in some kind of a comprehensive roadmap to show the experiences that providers are having right now?
I think this is Danielle. I think that pretty sums it up. When they submit proof, I know cost containment asks them to fax it over. So I guess a copy of that confirmation, fax confirmation is, you know what I mean, is the good proof that the dispute was faxed over, you know. So usually you have the cover sheet explaining what the, you know what I mean, request is and the confirmation that the fax was received.
Hey, Brandon, this is Julie. I just one other note to providers. As we go forward to collect this information from those that may be experiencing this issue, I think to start with, if you could email Brandon or me, just an email that states, yes, you have had this experience. And then Brandon and I will reach out back to you with an email of the information we need to collect in that format will be easiest. So to start with, if you could just email Brandon and I, so we have your name and email address, we will get you a detailed email of the documents and the things that we, so that's coming back the same for us to format for everybody, so we could take that back to Amerigroup and DHS for their involvement.
I will also say, if you are part of the 15 or so providers that have already reached out to me having experienced this, I will just email you back now or soon with what kind of information we're needing. So just an FYI to those who have already reached out to me, we'll follow up with you again for some more specific information. Obviously, we don't want PHI, but if we can get like claim IDs or, you know, other identifying information, that would mean nothing to me, honestly. That's what we're kind of shooting for here. Okay, so I'm going to go into the chat. And so if there is a question in here, if it's related to some of this discussion that we've already had, I'm probably going to be skipping it, unless it's asking something different. So I do see that there's a question regarding EVV billing, and I'm pretty sure Danielle answered that in the chat already regarding, do you export for billing monthly, weekly, or daily? And the response was that you can do whatever you would like as far as exporting for billing, into CareBridge. I'm not sure if this is, so this question is about, it is about home health claims and the XB modifier. And it's all part of that piece where some agencies did end up submitting some corrections during that time frame. If everyone remembers correctly, at the beginning of this year or the end of 20, we'd been directed, I think, I don't know if it was from John or from someone at Amerigroup, that if you were to submit corrected claims by a given date, and I wanted to say it was in the middle of February that you had to have them in by, that they could reprocess those claims. And I think this is in regards to some of those that maybe are denying for timely filing. The question is, how do they get these claims to then reprocess now? And I think, Danielle, you might have something for me here.
Yeah, they would just have to reach out to their representative and just make sure they, you know what I mean, and even if it's just an email, you know what I mean, with the spreadsheet of the claims, but just make sure they let the representative know what these claims are for, you know what I mean? So, because I'm going to be honest, once they see the claims are denied timely, you know what I mean, they're going to come back to the provider. So the providers let them know that this was part of the, you know what I mean, the process that Amerigroup initiated for home health providers to rebill. We did, and these are the claims that denied timely. So then the representative can have those claims reprocessed.
Thanks, Danielle. This next question is on a denial code PPC45, which says that it exceeds fee schedule, exceeds ambulatory rate. And they're also having claims taken back for original claim overpaid, even when the claim actually did not overpay. Any thoughts on if those are known incorrect denial reasons or take back reasons at all?
I have not heard of that, but you know, I mean, if like I said, if the provider wants me to send me a couple claims, I can just look to see if I can, you know what I mean, to figure out, to give them a heads up of what that issue is before they reach out to the representative. And for the take backs, once again, a lot of times I will look at the actual electronic image of the claim and I can tell if that claim was really billed correctly. There are some times where providers have put that information on when they submit electronically, but it did not come over. So by the time we got the claim, it was missing information. So I can just actually look at it to say, this is an accurate recoupment, or, you know what I mean? This is, you know what I mean? Wrong. That much I can do.
So,
but
sorry, Danielle,
go ahead.
With that comment, or with that topic that you just mentioned there, where providers would submit a claim with the proper information, and then by the time you get it, it drops off. How would a provider know that that information dropped off if the claim was paid?
They would not know. You know what I mean? In this aspect, because of what we're dealing with, and sometimes, you know what I mean, the claims was paid, and if it was paid, it was paid incorrectly, which is why it was recouped. But unfortunately, you know what I mean, I don't do electronic billing, so I don't know what type of report they get to see, you know what I mean, what was actually on the claim. I know some providers had issues with their clearinghouses, and it was just like a data issue. So they would submit a claim a couple weeks later. I would check it. This is still missing. So I don't know, you know what I mean, if that's the case, but I really wouldn't know exactly unless they come to someone to actually look at the claim, you know what I mean? They may not know.
Thanks, Danielle. I think, you know, that specific comment and situation is what a lot of these providers are experiencing, where as far as they know, when they submitted it with the XB or the Z code, it went through and paid, and it even did pay right in many cases. And now the recoupment is requesting the funds back for not having that information on there. And we know that it did. So it's being able to, one, go back to 2017 for an electronically submitted claim to prove that information was on there has proven very difficult to do. And that's part of this whole claims dispute process, and us being able to prove that they were inappropriately taken back. Because ultimately, whether the code's on there or not, I understand that it needs to be, but the care was provided properly to the person based off of their having Medicare, right? And not being homebound. So ultimately, the care was provided appropriately. It's this code that is the problem that is being dropped off of claims, and we don't know about it, and they're being paid anyways. And so it's really setting us up for failure when we have to go back and then prove this. It's the problem.
Yes, and I mean, I understand your concern, but how, you know, unfortunately, how Amerigroup sees it, or cost containment when they do the audit, that it's not, when we're not disputing that care was provided, and we appreciate that, but it was not a clean claim. So that's unfortunately how the recoupment can happen and does happen.
It was submitted clean, but lost information somewhere in the shuffle.
It's lost information. And then there are some providers too, and I don't want everybody to think that it drops off, you know, to everybody. There are some providers that it really wasn't billed, you know what I mean? And when I reached out to them, you know what I mean? They had to reach out to their biller. So some of that, you know, some, you know, times where it really was billed incorrectly, and that information was missing as well.
No, I completely understand that. And I do agree that there are instances where it is flat out missed on a claim. And I know some even took advantage of that until February. I'll just say 15th date, even though I'm not sure that that's entirely accurate, but that mid-February date to where they ended up putting that information on there to be able to correct it, because they know that it had been missed because of all the struggles that were happening yes. in 2016, 2017, trying to figure out how we can make this work, right? And so there are mm-hmm. instances where it wasn't on there for sure. But I know that, you know, we've been preaching on this and talking about this for so long that we know that this needs to be on there. And it was always on there before with IME. We always had to have something. It was in box 18. We had XB in there. And that was what bypassed the need for a Medicare denial. So I don't disagree with you on that, but I do think that the problem of it dropping off is probably larger than what we think it is.
Yes, agreed.
Okay, I'm flipping through the chat questions. I know we have several in here. There's an example in there from Jennifer. Jennifer, if you could email me that example, that would be great. Sorry, I'm flipping.
Hey, Brandon,
Julie,
looks like we had.
Go ahead,
looks
Julie.
Looks like we had a question on how our meals to be billed.
Oh yeah, I missed that one. Sorry. And I think I might need more. Do we need more info on that, or is that a question that maybe Danielle or John or Angela understands?
That I don't understand. You know, I mean, if they could give me, you know, more information, and I would forward it over to the appropriate person for that, you know, what I mean, for an answer.
Yeah, I just want to note that meals are a benefit in various different plan types. So we do need to know that piece of information at a minimum.
So this, and I don't know if you probably don't have an answer to this, but I'm flipping through the chat now. The question is faxing cost containment correspondence letters or notices under consideration? Because according to this provider, the auto-generated letters sometimes aren't actually mailed out, or they're mailed to the wrong address. I know that's happened where an update to an address has been given and to Amerigroup, and it may not have flown all the way to the cost containment unit. And so then the provider never actually receives the letter. So the ultimate question is, has there been any additional consideration to faxing out those letters, or, you know, duplicating some of the processes to make sure that the letter is actually received by the provider?
That's an answer, you know, for cost containment. I don't think I can't answer that. So I don't want to, you know, want to say, you know, what they can and cannot do, or will not consider. Or maybe they just cannot, you know, maybe they don't have that, you know what I mean? That's not even a function and that they can do.
Right. Right. It's possible. I think it's just the question of, you know, we just want to make sure we get a letter if we are supposed to be getting a letter, so that way we can follow the appropriate dispute process, I think is the impetus probably behind the suggestion.
Does Amerigroup have somebody from cost containment that can be on the calls?
I'm going to give you the short answer. I don't think that is possible.
I don't know what's possible and what's not possible. We have made a request. They have not acknowledged that request. I will make that request again.
Thank you so much.
So I'm flipping through. I'm seeing several comments. So this question is a different topic. It's on regarding the COVID relief rate, those COVID claims. This person is saying they submitted a claim on a January COVID claim. Are these still being reprocessed? They were paid, but they didn't have the $300 per day add-on for COVID. Is that still being worked?
As far as I know, I think they need to submit a reconsideration for those claims. I know those claims are manually processed, so maybe the claims examiner missed that information. I don't know of any automatic reprocessing. You know, that's just, you know, something for Julie's team. But if not to wait on that, I would, you know, if I was a provider, submit a reconsideration or reach out to their representative.
Yes, I was going to say reach out to your representative and resubmit the claims level data.
This is a follow-up to that meals question. In regards to billing of meals, does EVV include billing meals the CDAC person receives, or do we still need to bill them using the paper claims? EVV does not include meals.
So. Yeah, I just got an answer, and because I think I asked the EVV contact, our Amerigroup EVV contact, the first one, and she just sent me an answer for the second part.
Yep. So, yeah, just only the CDAC. Even if they're a CDAC person, you only bill the CDAC services through EVV. The rest of the services are billed as you would traditionally bill them, I think is part of what Danielle also mentioned in the chat. Is that right?
Okay. Mm-hmm. And yes. So yeah, those questions that I was able to get somebody really quick to give me an answer.
Perfect. Yep, I see that.
And she dropped the billing codes right into the chat.
Yep, perfect. The rest of the comments or questions, I think, were related to, you know, the whole recoupment project. And I'm not sure that an answer is even possible on some of the questions at this point regarding funds that were recouped incorrectly and timelines on them being paid back. I think as we continue to work through this with the feedback from many of you all, that will determine, you know, as quickly as we get that information, as quick as we can turn it back over to Amerigroup and DHS to make sure that we're all on the same page with how this is flowing. So that way we can make sure that the process is working as it should and funds are either appropriately taken back, or if they were inappropriately taken back, are returned based off of our disputes. So I don't know that there's really a timeline that we can really give at this point on that specific question. I'm now at the bottom of the chat. And
I see Emma put in some stuff on the EVV and billing codes there, the last one I see.
Yep. I think Danielle copied and pasted that into there from
where yes. I am. I reached out to Emma for those questions. You know, she's our EVV, you know, little specialist contact. So that was her reply. Yes.
Perfect. Okay. And then that's a question not necessarily for Amerigroup. I think it's a question for the rest of the group. But, you know, seeing no other questions in the chat or in my email at this point for Amerigroup, I will be giving everyone 15 minutes of their day back. So if you have any, like we mentioned earlier, though, if you are a provider who is experiencing recoupments that you feel are inappropriate and you have followed the process and you're able to document that claims were inappropriately taken back and then you followed the proper channels and recoupment processes and dispute processes, we'd love to see that chain of events with specific claims to be able to aid in getting that fixed. I don't think that these recoupments are being done with malice, I would say. I think that it's confusing. It really is. So we just need to prove it, and that's what we're going to do. And so if you can provide that information to me and Julie, we would definitely aid you in helping to get this resolved. So with that, if Danielle or John, if you have any closing comments that you'd like to make, I'll give you an opportunity here.
No, just appreciate any additional information that the team can gather for us, and we will make sure that it gets in the cost containment inbox and we get a response.
And then one last request I think would be if you are able to provide us with some kind of a workflow or how that process is supposed to flow. I know you sent the comments from the letter, but if we should be getting a response, if we shouldn't be getting a response when we submit our claim disputes, and how that should all flow, that would, I think, would be helpful in us understanding if what we're doing is appropriate, I guess.
I will include that in my request to cost containment.
Perfect. Okay. Well, we will wrap it up. Thanks again to AmeriGroup for joining us and for all of our members for providing the comments and questions today. We appreciate it, and we'll continue working on your behalf to work some of this stuff out. And everyone have a good rest of the week. Thanks.
Great. Thank you.